we are not alone. Finding Intersex with Jackie Green.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe it. Guess, listen to this. So last week I posted episode one and it was 5 minutes and it's just me telling you my story, which by now you've heard or you've probably read. I'm an intersex woman. And I can't believe how comfortable I am saying that now because years of being very shy about talking about it and saying, no, I'm not going to use that word. No, I'm not going to tell people. I'm just going to lie. Now I scream it from the rooftops because I don't care. I don't care if you know. I actually want you to know because there are so many of us out there. The thing is, I've been told by doctors for years that there wasn't that many out there and that I wouldn't meet anyone like me. Joke's on you, Dak, because I've met a bunch of people like me now. This is so exciting. I have goosebumps telling you this. I reached out in groups online and on message boards to intersex individuals who want to come forward and tell their story, like I have, and the response is overwhelming. So now I can officially say I know people my age who are also born with an intersex variation. And today we're going to talk to one. Her name is Kelsey Brown. And I don't know if you can tell how excited I am. I'm just like so pumped. I've never met anyone like me that's close to my age that I can talk to until now. And now I know people. So I can't wait for you to meet Kelsey. Kelsey's awesome. I met her on Facebook, which is like the best way to meet someone, right? In 2017. So yeah, let's get talking to Kelsey. She's awesome. All right, we're good to go. Kelsey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So you're just getting off work, right?
Yeah, just leaving the parking garage now.
What do you do?
So I'm actually a pharmacy resident. So I am a pharmacist. I'm licensed. I'm just doing an extra year of training so that I can specialize in pediatrics.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
I can tell you I am not in anything smart like that, and I just work in radio. So this is super exciting. I've never talked to anyone remotely close to my age that's intersex.
Oh, awesome.
Have you met very many people?
Yeah, I've been to a few conferences. Two. So I met a few people that way and stay in touch with them as much as I can, but I feel like we're all so spread out.
Right.
That it's hard to find someone, and there's no one where that at least is like openly verbal about their condition in my area.
Right.
So it's been difficult.
I've gotten a few anonymous emails from people in my area, you know, like thanking me for talking about it and all that good stuff, but they're anonymous and they don't leave a response email and I don't know, I can't even get in touch with them.
Aw, yeah, I think how verbal and how open you're being about it is something that's really great for the community. And, like, it pushes a lot of people to feel so comfortable and so confident in coming out themselves and, like, telling their story. I feel like it's definitely something that's really needed for people in our generation.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot. Well, I want to know your story.
Well, so, I mean, I feel like my story is very similar to what a lot of people say, but, I mean, I am my own unique person, so it's a little different. But I was diagnosed at the age of 14. The typical, like, presentation prior to, like, I'm getting, like, 13, 14, developing, and, like, not having my friend come visit every month. And so I was getting concerned because, you know, as teenagers, we're always so concerned with, like, fitting that box of normality.
Right.
That we all kind of strive for, particularly in high school with the social norms being what they are today. And so I was really scared. And so initially it started with me going to the doctor. And prior to my genetic diagnosis, I was told flat, like point blank, that I would never be able to have my own children. And I mean, I know a lot of people, like this happens to a lot of people, but like at the age of 14, like taking the diagnosis off the table completely, like being told that you can never have your own children is pretty much devastating.
I completely agree with you, Kelsey. I wrote, the first time I ever came out about this was in an essay I wrote in college for like an English class. And I thought it was really good, and I was excited because I never wrote about this or even talked about it. And the professor gave me like a C, and she wrote on it that I wasn't open enough. And one of her comments was, "Did you really worry about children when you were 14?" Yeah.
Well, yeah. I feel like particularly in my situation, like I went to religious school my entire life from kindergarten all the way up to high school, and particularly Catholic high school. And so, like, man and wife and, like, being able to produce offspring was, like, a big part of, like, our religion classes. And, like, even I remember now, like, one of our religion teachers being, like, "Oh, you can't have children, you can't get married in the Catholic Church." And,
what?
Like, that can set me into a spiral. And, like, it made me so upset. And, like, this was just recently after I was diagnosed, and I only told a few of my friends about it, but at that point, like, they had been, like, they stood up for it, and I was like, no, like, we know people that can't have kids, and, like, that doesn't sound right. And, like, so, I mean, that was good hearing early on, having that kind of support system, which I feel like is super crucial for anyone diagnosed with any sort of disorder of sexual development.
Now, did you tell your parents that they were saying these things to you at school?
No. When I was diagnosed, I kind of turned my emotional center off, and at least in regards to, like, how I communicated with my mom and my dad. My dad, for the most part, didn't really know what was going on. I mean, he knew I couldn't have kids, but, like, he didn't know the schematics behind it. And my mom has been someone that's very supportive in my condition, but at the same time, like, she's very supportive, but I feel like she doesn't understand to a certain extent because, like, she had me, and, like, it's hard for someone to understand, like, the depths of pain that causes unless you've been put in that situation yourself.
Oh my gosh, you worded that so eloquently. That is exactly how I feel. Like, when I talk to my mom or I talk to, like, someone else, I'm like, I understand that you get this from a parent's perspective, but you can never understand unless you go through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Exactly.
So, you have AIS, right?
Yeah, I have complete androgen insensitivity syndrome.
Okay, that's what I have, too. So, you had no inklings that you might have this until you were 14?
Yeah, like, I had no inklings. Like, I mean, thinking back on it now, like, there were some, like, medical, like, possible things that could have been, like, oh, like, this could be a thing, but, like, it may... Because I had a double hernias when I was about 1 year old, which is something that's pretty common.
Yes.
With androgen insensitivity syndrome diagnosis. But at the same time, like, that's a common, like, it's a pretty common thing in kiddos, but it can also have a very broad differential. And, like, having, AIS come up on that differential is very low on the totem pole.
Right. Did you end up having your internal testes removed?
Yes, I did. So my doctor, so this has actually happened in, like, a very sensitive time in my family's life. So my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 10 years old. And so my mom had just recently gone into remission. And, like, once the doctor said cancer, like, I saw what my mom went through, and I freaked out, and my mom freaked out, and we're like, take them out.
Right.
But looking back on it now, like, almost 15 years later, well, that's terrifying, it's, like, I feel like I could have really benefited by keeping them because, like, I would have had those my own endogenous hormones versus having, like, the synthetic hormones, which I were taking for a little bit of time, but I took myself off of them because I was going crazy.
So what do you take anything now?
No, I do not take anything now.
Okay, as a pharmacist, I guess you're one to talk to about that. What was going on that made you want to take yourself off the estrogen?
So I would definitely, like, if anyone's thinking of taking themselves off of their hormone therapy, definitely consult your doctor first. Like, I'm not, like, supporting, like, just randomly taking yourself off of medication, but just looking at my own signs, like I was getting very moody. Like, I gained weight, and I was not a happy person. And I don't know if I could completely attest that to the hormones themselves, but I took myself off of them, and things got a little better. So,
you felt evened out.
What?
You felt more evened out?
Yeah, like I felt like, because with the hormones themselves, like, it kind of creates that, like, roller coaster that our bodies go through.
Right.
And, like, I wasn't accustomed to, like, the highs and the lows and, like, the fluctuation. And so it kind of sent my body into a tailspin. I was like, okay, I can't handle this.
How old were you when you had the surgery?
I was 16 years old.
16? All right, yeah, I was 15, so I was right there with you. For those who are listening that might not understand what we mean by the surgery, what we mean is a gonadectomy, which is basically if you're born with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, you have internal testes. Now, Kelsey and I have that, and they had us remove them with basically fear. Was that what you'd say?
Yeah. I would definitely say fear and not knowing. So there's not a lot of real evidence out there in regards to whether to take them out or whether to leave them in. I know several people with our condition that still have their testes or gonads for whatever they want to call them, and they're doing perfectly fine. They're just getting annual exams, which we would have to do regardless.
Right.
And so I feel like introducing the exogenous or synthetic hormones that we do definitely puts us at an increased risk for secondary conditions such as increasing our cancer risk and increasing risk for hypertension and all those other kind of things that we shouldn't be worrying about at our age. But I have to go to the doctor annually just to get checked for breast cancer because of my mom's history, and then also in addition to like the hormone exposure. And so, like, it introduces a lot of risk that could have been avoided by keeping them. But, like, looking at it from the doctor's point of view, like, I can kind of understand that, too, being in the medical field. Like, there could be this opportunity for cancer, and you want to avoid it. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword.
It is a double-edged sword, and I hate to go on and, like, criticize the medical community and act like doctors are terrible, because my doctor was a wonderful woman and she was nice, but I do feel like there was a lot of ramifications I faced going into the surgery. Like, I was basically told to lie to everybody.
Yeah.
How did you tell your peers when you were out for 2-3 weeks and had this surgery?
So I've had to come up with several colorful different kind of like stories in regards to several different surgeries that I've had, but mainly that I had to get something fixed. Just like something fixed, like, oh, I had like a torn ligament or something to that extent, or oh, I had to have my appendix out or something. So, like, I mean, I don't like lying, but like, it's kind of pushed me into that corner. It's like, oh, I don't want to tell them I had my testes removed. They'll look at me like I'm completely crazy here, standing in front of you, a 16-year-old.
Right.
Woman who's pretty fully developed. Like, you had what?
That's exactly how I felt. Oh my gosh, like, exactly. So then you hate lying to people, but the lying, I don't know about you, but it eats at you.
Yeah. Like, I hate having to tell people that all these different things, and like having to kind of put like a silver lining on it to just kind of shield them from what actually happened. Like,
right.
Because I've had through my development, I had to have reconstructive surgery in regards to my vaginal canal. And so, like, I had to tell people that I was, I had, like, this big GI emergency. And I was like, well, no, I didn't.
That's a really painful surgery.
It is.
And you had to go through that all alone and not tell anybody?
I mean, I've told some of my closer friends as I'm coming out, and apparently I'm telling, like, the world now on your podcast, so that's great.
And apparently,
yeah, on the podcast, that's great. Sorry, kids. and so...
Things I didn't know I talked about today. My vagina.
Yeah. but, like, it was really hard. Like, I felt like I had to kind of hide myself from my friends, and, like, that in its own self can do a lot of harm to a teenager's psyche. Like, you're trying to figure out who you are, and then, like, having to throw, like, oh, I have to make this big story up about what's going on with my body, and then just to kind of still, like, fit that norm. I feel like that's such a common theme in regards to just how we portray ourselves to the community, like, especially as, like, first being diagnosed and just, like, working through it, like, we're really being forced into, like a box. And, like, a lot of people who are intersex and identify as intersex say, like, those binary boxes, those gender binary, like, really forcing us to try and fit those, when in reality we fit our own kind of
right
definition.
No, I completely agree. Now, like I personally identify just as woman and as a female.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
But I have intersex, you know, variation, and that's, I'm part of that, you know, I do find myself as part of that community, no matter how you identify.
Right. Yeah, I definitely identify as a woman, and as, like, you kind of alluded to, like, I do also identify as intersex, and so kind of finding what works for you and what makes you happy in the long run.
Yeah, I went to Cabo on a vacation with my husband not long ago, and it was, like, super fun, but we were at this restaurant, and I was having such a good time, and I went to the bathroom, and this is the weirdest thing. I've never seen this at a bathroom before. On the bathroom walls, instead of saying man and woman, it had chromosomes, like paintings of, like, the XY and XX. And I thought, what? And, like, normally the bathroom controversy never affects me directly. I'm a female. Yeah. I'm a woman. But that, like, even though no one knows, I just felt terrible for, like, 30 minutes about myself. I just felt so bad. Like, I'm in the woman's bathroom, but I have XY chromosomes.
Yeah, I think that's something that was the hardest for me personally to kind of get over in regards to my diagnosis. It's just, like, those two letters, just, like, the X and the Y. It's, like, I don't know how two little letters can have so much power over someone, but, like, I felt like they identified me for the longest time, and it made me ashamed of who I am. Like I tell people now, it's like, oh, yeah, I have AIS, and I'm working in the hospital, and they're like, oh, my gosh, you're genetically male? I was like, whoa, hold the phone here.
Yeah, hold the phone here is exactly it.
It's like, hey, do I look like a guy? No.
No. And, like,
my phenotype and my genotype are completely different than people.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the problem is our medical community isn't overly knowledgeable. Like, my mom used to always tell me, if the doctor asks you when your last period was, just lie. And I'd say, why? She goes, because it's too much to get into. I'm scared they're going to hurt your feelings. And, you know, I wouldn't lie because it bothered me, but they did always hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I've had interactions with doctors, like, going for physicals for work, when you're, like, starting a new job or something like that, and they ask that question, like, the dreaded question, and that's why I hate going to doctor's offices, is, when was your last period? Oh, I don't get one. Well, why not? Well, I don't have a uterus. Why not? Because I have AIS. What's that?
Oh, my gosh. I love you for saying, what's that? I get that almost every time I go to just a normal doctor, like, for a checkup. What's that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're the doctor. Well, how don't you know?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, let me educate you a little bit. Like, this is what this is. Oh, I remember seeing that in my anatomy book in medical school. Oh, okay. I'm so glad that you remember seeing that.
Right.
But I'm like, it was like this black and white picture. I'm like, oh, my God, that picture will follow us to the day that we all die.
We'll never get over it.
And then, of course, she proceeds to be like, oh, my gosh, I have to go get one of my my partners. Hold on 1 second. And, of course, like, I mean, to a certain extent, yes, it's interesting because we are, even our diagnosis is relatively rare in regards to others. But, like, it was like, oh, my God, I don't need to see two doctors to question why I am who I am.
Exactly, and I'm not here to tell you why I am what I am. I'm here because my knee hurts or something stupid.
Yeah, just tell my boss that I'm healthy-ish.
Yeah, just let them know that I'm here and I'm still kicking. You don't need to ask about my insides and my private parts.
Nope.
What is probably the stupidest question you've ever got from, like, a peer when you come out?
Well, I don't know if it'd be the stupidest question, but it'd probably be one of the stupidest remarks. And that would be, oh, my gosh, you're so lucky you don't have a period.
Oh.
I can't tell you how many times I hear this remark, and I just kind of look at them and externally and internally roll my eyes.
Yes.
Like,
you're preaching to the choir on that. I get that comment so much. Well, you know, I hate to say it, but you are pretty lucky you don't have a period. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Talk to me when you have, like, 3 kids and I have none. Yeah, you know.
Exactly, and that's what's really hard, too, is in the kid stuff aside, there's other side effects, too. I mean, like, I'm on artificial hormones the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And, like, I've even had people ask me questions, how did you get boobs? I'm not a... And it's like, things like that make you so angry. And it's like, I try not to be angry because I want to educate and help people. But it's like,
We
are, just because I'm different than you, doesn't mean you have the right to ask me questions about my private parts.
Right. Oh. Like, I'm pretty sure we learned this in third grade that we don't ask other people about what's in the pants. Like,
right. That, what's in your pants stays in your pants.
Yeah, you don't gotta share it with anybody.
I don't need to know what's going on up in there.
Nope.
Well, what is it like now? How have things changed over the years, you know, being intersex and coming to terms with it?
I think one of the biggest things that's helped me the most is just really connecting with other people with my diagnosis, as well as others within the spectrum of identifying as intersex or through the sexual development. Because I know when I was diagnosed by my genetic counselor, like, she told me, oh, you never meet anyone your age, like, anyone like you. Like, you are one in a million. You are going to be, don't even think about trying to find someone like you because you're not going to find them. And then, like, he was like, there's this whole support group of people like that.
There's a shocking amount of people who are online and in a community like us, and it's shocking. Like, I was told the same thing you were told. I wouldn't find anyone.
Yeah. And then, like, she was like, oh, maybe there's one person, but, like, she's on the other side of the country. I was like, okay, you're really helpful. Thanks.
Right.
But I think, just, as I said, like, connecting with people and not being afraid to really open up and express yourself and talk to people about it. Tell people about it. I feel like the more people that are educated and the more people that know that we exist, why we exist, and who we are, will be the benefit. Be the most beneficial for us and for future generations. That's why one of the biggest reasons why I'm so vocal about my condition is because, hey, yeah, I was really hurt when I was a teenager. I went through some pretty dark stuff, and it sucked. But I want to try and prevent that from our future generations. And I feel like it's so awesome going to the conference, going to conferences for the support group and seeing all our young children just like running all over the place and interacting, and like they know nothing different. They don't know that they're and that's something that just like really makes me feel at peace with my condition. Yeah, it sucks I can't have kids, but they're going to be happier in the long run.
And, you know, there's so many options down the road. I mean, I hate saying this because it's so cliche, because everyone said this to me. You could always adopt, but, I mean, it is an option, but you don't want someone who doesn't have, who's not intersex and doesn't have this issue to tell you that, because you're like, I get it.
I know, exactly.
It's hard.
I always had the plan for adopting, but like I didn't want to be my only option.
You don't want, all your main option was taken away from you. Super young, like you were born with no, like you couldn't help it, and then you can't talk about it because when you talk about it, people act like you're weird.
Yeah,
it's hard. What do you think is something important that people who are ignorant to intersex people, what do you think is something important that they should know about being intersex?
I feel probably the most important thing is that we are simply just like you, like everyone else out there. We all have our own internal issues going on. We all have our own social problems, our own body image issues, and that instead of jumping to judgment and making hasty decisions on what you read on Google, ask someone. Like, if you know if you hear someone diagnosed with something, like, don't just be ignorant and be like, oh, I'm going to Google what this means, and then, because, of course, like, the most generic things are going to pop up, and the generic nature of things are going to just lead people's minds all over the place.
Oh, I hate Google is my worst. I remember I told someone what was up with me. And I kind of gave her the rundown, and then she said, ooh, I'm going to Google that right now. I'm so curious about this. And I was like, please don't. Please don't Google me in front. A, that's so rude. And B, like, what you're going to find on Google is a bunch of medical terms that scared me as a child. Like, scared me.
Yeah. And are frankly out of date.
And are out of date. Yes. So true. I couldn't agree with you more. It's hard, and there's so much more educating we need to do. It's just like right now I'm at a place where I don't know about you, where I feel like everyone knows about this because I've talked about it so much and you've talked about it so much, and we're in a community online with other people that have intersex variations. But then like I write an article and I get like a million messages that they've never heard of anything like this, and they're so shocked that this exists and that I have this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? You're that shocked? Like, I guess I didn't know it was that... I mean, I know it's obscure, but I've kind of gotten so immune to it.
Yeah, a lot of people that like I come out to, like, oh, I've never heard of that or something like that. And I feel like that just really plays on the fact that everyone's still so very private about that,
right?
About our conditions, which I completely understand, and I support them for it because it is terrifying to come out to someone like that.
It's scary because you don't know what someone's going to say. They might say something rude or ask you an awful question about your genitals. Like, it's not your business.
You're definitely putting yourself out on a limb by coming out, but I feel like overall it's really helpful and just, it's very cathartic. Like,
it is.
Just very working all your emotions out and being, one of the biggest issues is just being, that fear of being rejected and, like, cast out, like, socially outcasted, where in most part, like, the interactions that I've had with people, they've been like, oh, okay, that's cool. What's for dinner?
Same. Same. Almost every interaction I've had has been like that, where they're like, oh, I mean, that's crazy. You want to go to, like, McDonald's?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Super chill. Like, people don't react as bad as you make it up to be in your head.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know about you, but we concentrate a lot in the medical community, which is a huge issue. But I also think schools. I mean, like, I don't know about you, but it was super confusing. I'm 15. I'm having this surgery. I'm told to tell everyone I had a hysterectomy due to tumors. And I'm in health class learning about females and males. And those are the, you know, this is what you are if you're female. And I'm like, I don't understand.
I don't fit that box. What?
Yeah, I don't. I thought I'm female, but I don't have any of that happening.
Yeah.
I got like a D minus, I remember, in health my freshman year, which was the semester after my surgery, because I was basically an angsty teenager and I basically turned it off. Like, I was like, this doesn't apply to me. I don't care. And I'm upset.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard. Particularly when it's been being thrown at you from so many different angles. You're getting it at school, you're getting it with your girlfriends or with your guy friends, and getting it from home, and like you're getting it from yourself because you have like certain expectations prior to being diagnosed of yourself, like, oh yeah, we're gonna grow up, go to college, get a job, find a husband, get married, have babies, and live life. And now where that can still happen, your path has kind of gone off of the nice, like, laid out premeditated brick road that you plan for you, that has been planted for you by society, into like this grand, wild, unknown area.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly true. And I think too, like, you're passionate about having children. It's like hard when you hit your 20s and then your friends start getting pregnant on accident, some of them. And then you're like, I can't be mad at you for that. Like, that's selfish of me, but you can't help but feel that tinge of like, oh
yeah. I love all my friends. Every time I see a baby announcement on Facebook, I'm like, oh dear god.
Lord help me, hold me back.
And it's like, it's particularly with our age, like late 20s, early 30s, like, yep. All of our friends are having kids, all of our siblings are having kids, and you just see that, I was like, I can't have that, like, It's really hard.
Do you have any siblings?
I have three step siblings.
Oh, cool. But so how have they adapted to you and your intersex condition?
I mean, we really haven't talked about my condition per se. I mean, I'm friends with them on Facebook, so, and I'm very vocal about it, so I'm assuming they've seen my post.
But they didn't know growing up?
No, so my mom and my stepdad got married when I was about 13, 14 years old. And so all my siblings were kind of grown and out in college and out of the house by then.
Okay, I gotcha. But that was a hard time for you because that was about when you were having your surgery and finding things out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of life change in one time.
It was.
When was the first time that you found the community? Was it on your own or did your mom encourage it?
So I found them on my own, just kind of like going through Facebook. I can't remember the name of the person, but I found one person. Somehow we got connected, and then she connected me to the group. And initially, I was very skeptical about it just because, I mean, a lot of the people in the group were of the older generation, and there weren't a lot of young people, and I was like, oh, great, like, I'm not going to have anyone young to talk to. And then, like, I went to a conference, and I was like, oh, there's all these young people I can talk to. And then, like, just friending them and building that online social community, even though it is online, it's very much offline as well. As we interact with each other, and then just continuing to grow that that community with others. Like, we become friends, and then just, like, seeing your little one grow up. I know, deviating from the question itself,
right.
I know personally, my mom has followed you on Facebook.
Cool!
And as soon as we heard that, hey, when we heard that your sister was pregnant with your little one, my mom about bawled her eyes out and was I wish I could do that for you. And I was like, oh, my God, stop.
Oh, my God, stop.
You're going to make me bawl.
You're like, I'm going to get upset, and I don't want my mom carrying my baby.
Yeah, and then, like we saw that you, like, she had her, and, like, it was just, like, this big cry fest. And, like, it gives a lot of hope for people, people in our age group that, like, see this dead end this condition as kind of like a dead end in regards to children, come to fruition. You can be productive, like, you can have children. And so it's been something that's definitely been very inspiring to me. And I've loved watching her, like, all your pictures that you post. I'm like, oh, my God.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I post a lot of pictures of her. She's, like, the cutest little baby.
She is pretty cute.
Oh, well, are you going to conference this year?
Unfortunately, I'm not. So it is not really possible for me right now just because I am transitioning into a new job and moving to Miami, Florida. And so it's kind of a big transition year for me. And so I'm hoping to go next year. Maybe I'll be in Orlando next year. Shout out.
Shout out. Make it in Florida. I'm into that. I'm so glad that you got to go a few times and, like, experience it and meet other people who are intersex.
Yes, it's definitely an eye-opening moment. Definitely kind of like bring things full circle.
It really does. Well, thank you so much for joining me and talking about your story. I know it can be hard.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. I love any opportunity just to kind of, like, chat and, like, answer questions and really just educate people about our condition.
I know.
Like, one more person that learns is one less awkward, embarrassing question that another person has to answer, so.
Oh, my God. Exactly. I couldn't put it any better. This is crazy. This is crazy. You guys, I'm on episode 2, and I found intersex. I found someone else, and I'm going to find way more. We're going to learn other people's stories, and it won't just be AIS, which is what I have. We'll have plenty of AIS people. We'll also have other intersex individuals with other syndromes that fall under that umbrella of intersex. And there's 40 syndromes, believe it or not. There's a lot of us out there, and I can't wait to meet even more. And we'll share with you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
We are not alone. Finding Intersex with Jackie Green.